Okay, welcome to the FreezingProcess.net podcast about Maine music. I'm Dan Bodoff, here with Trent Gay, co-host of the podcast. Tonight we are with the Baltic Sea, or three members of the Baltic Sea, after hours at Buck Dancer's Choice in Portland. Todd, Ray, and Jeremy. So, I was actually thinking a couple things really cool about hanging out with you guys tonight. Trent, I don't know if you know, Todd and I actually went to USM together.
Music department. Oh, yeah.
Way back.
Yeah.
I played five-string bass. When we played together,
remember? I remember that.
I used to tune...
How could I forget?
D-A-D-G. Todd was the man that taught me to tune that way.
Wow.
You don't remember that?
Yeah. we got together. It was the old Twitch Boy space down on Forest Ave. You, Dave Hinault, and myself.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that, actually.
And it was the first time I'd been exposed to bass effects because Ryan had his rig there, and you were like, play with Ryan's stuff. And I was just, you guys were playing, and I was just like making all these crazy sounds.
I do remember that.
You were like, no, dude, you're tuned to drop D. Tune the B down to A.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's what I did for the rest of my life.
No kidding. Yeah, cool. All right.
Yeah, from that point forward, that's how I tuned. Nice. In fact, we did. I got together with old reunion bands a while back to try to relearn the songs, and I didn't remember them anymore because I was tuned in standard tuning, playing a 4-string bass. No idea where the notes were anymore. Yeah. So
that's funny.
Lasting impression.
Okay.
Thanks,
man. Appreciate that.
And Ray. Ray simply just, he taught me to love. Didn't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that, but I'm glad. I'm glad, because I remember you before you knew how to love.
Yeah.
You're a much nicer guy now. Yeah.
He really is.
And just meeting Jeremy for the first time tonight, so perhaps you will have some sort of lasting impression.
He's holding a stapler right now. Watch out.
So, first of all, thank you very much for giving me a copy of the album to check out. New album is super rad, and I'm hoping that we can sort of talk about the way the songs and the album is actually composed.
Sure.
When I listened to it, the songs sounded much more than just, and as well your guys' sound is, more than verse-chorus type thing. They seems to be some real careful planning and writing, strategizing about the way it was all put together. One of the first things that struck me about it is the use of the vocals. The first time I listened through it, I think I listened to it out of order, and the first couple songs I listened to, the vocals were relatively sparse. And then, actually, just today, I randomized it, and I got... Swiss Ticking Time and Foss right in a row, and those were actually really
pretty vocal
heavy. Yeah. So what's your how do you use vocals? How do you approach vocals with this, or is it just it happens as it happens?
I guess it depends. The writing process, at least for maybe about half of the first record and pretty much all of this record, I don't know if it's sheer laziness on my end or what it is, but I can never really complete ideas or melodies or even instances until we feel like the rest of the music is sort of there. I'm not good at that whole process of doing it as we go along kind of vibe.
Right.
And that's something that I'm hoping to relearn. It's weird because if I do it with any other group that I've ever played with, I'm fine with it. But for some reason with this, I can't do it while I go along.
Is it because
I think it has to do with the idea that everything that we do is pretty open-ended until we... It's a really gelatinous form, the way that we write, I feel, you know? It's like throwing a bunch of spaghetti on the wall and seeing what sticks, and then hopefully out of that stickiness, I'll figure out what to do and what not, you know, what not to do. But, I mean, there are certain sections of songs that we'll do that I'll have melody lines that I'll be like, oh, that's cool. And I'll try to remember that to come back to it when the time comes. But so I have to admit that some of the record on the sparseness end of it is just the fact that I'm like, what the hell do I sing over this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Seriously. I mean, It's that whole battle, and I know that you know this battle.
Yeah, yeah, no,
of,
well,
of being able to splitting your brain in half and half to be able to play guitar, play parts, and be able to sing over it. You know what I mean? So it's always that's always a battle.
You're being a little humble because whenever we have a new piece, maybe we'll get three parts together. Todd, you'll almost right away. You know, you'll be like, I have an idea, and yeah. There seems to be two different, maybe more than two, but one is the more instrumental approach, which that sparse fits that sparse stuff really well.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah,
using my voice as more of an instrument,
right?
Like a horn, or you know, yes, it's funny. It's funny that I think there are certain parts that I wish that like my it was a sax or something, you know, or something like that, you know, but.
That's the way I felt it on the track one, in the order of the songs you sent me anyway. That it sounded as though the vocals were simply just another instrument, not the center, the focal piece of the of the composition. Yep.
I felt like you sort of like thought about your arrangements that way for a long time. I noticed that a while back, you know, like I think tracking the first one even, like, or writing some of the first LP, just the way you arrange is often much more like an instrument. Your voice is an instrument.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I think that we always get lumped into this group of like this post-rock bands, which we don't really like getting put in that world because I think we're a lot different than a lot of those other bands. But it's a joke that if we didn't have a singer, we'd be much more ahead of the game and be like a lot more popular than what we are because we would be able to be like, oh, well, those guys are post-rock and they don't have a singer and blah, blah, blah. So it's like this dual-edged thing. So it's kind of fun to be like, yeah, well, I'm singing words, but it's not really the focal point of it all, you know?
At what point do you start thinking lyrically? Ever start from there, or is that something that also that kind of comes at the end?
It depends. I guess I think a lot of what I do, I think actually I try to write, there's only one song on the record that I wrote from scratch with the music in mind, and that was like Heavy. That was the only song, and I didn't want it to become like so politically driven as to what it was, but it just happened that way, I think. But the rest of the record and everything else that I do, I normally will write ahead of time or write alone when I don't have music or I don't have anything to reference it to, and I'll just come up with scribble, and then like come back and be like, okay, well, I've got this piece of music that we've composed, and I need to fit this all together. How do I do it? And then that's when I say, okay, well, I can do this and do this. And then I try to cram all that crap into the song and see what happens. And if it works, that's great. Or if there's sections that don't, then I have to get rid of it and rewrite some stuff.
Right.
So a lot of this record was done that way, but I don't really think like, oh, this song reminds me of this and I have to write about this. Anything that happens that is like that, and I actually surprise myself sometimes, especially lines, you know, like I'll say whatever I'm saying during that line has something, whether you guys have heard what I said and mimic something to it, I surprise myself sometimes like that, you know, where it's like, whoa, holy crap, you know, but it wasn't planned.
Yeah.
It's like a total, you know.
Should say that we never see this process either. So it's interesting hearing him talk about it because by the time we hear the song, he's done with it and we're just rehearsing it.
Right. Yeah, it's true. You rarely ever. Or and you then, see me in my frustration, like on the newest couple of songs where I'm like, I know what I want to do, but I can't do it, you know? Because it's that whole dual brain thing, you know?
So you come in, Todd, with with the song pretty well constructed or pretty well mapped out and then come into rehearsal with these guys and then
generally it's like us banging out the parts, me banging out my guitar parts, figuring out what we have to work with, and this is like a very loose structure of stuff, and it's like, okay, before I go away to work on it, I'll be like, oh, I think I'm gonna sing over this part, I think I'm not gonna sing over this part, you know, sort of like a general roadmap of sorts. Then I'll take that recording from practice, dump it into Pro Tools, and just work. And sometimes it comes very quickly, and other times it doesn't.
It's interesting, because as we're arranging too, right, we don't necessarily know. We're just kind of going through parts and arrangements we've done, and we don't really know, like, well, this could be the chorus, this might not be the chorus, like this, you know what I mean? Like, it kind of depends on how he treats it vocally a lot of the times.
And that's the big thing for me is, like, I know what I need to do, and I listen to it with what I've recorded and parts and harmonies and this and that to try to figure it out. And then it's always the, oh, I have to sing and I have to, like, learn how to play against what I sing, which a lot of times they never line up, ever. So sometimes it's easier than others. But.
So are you adjusting what you're doing with the guitar parts or even the bass parts? And the bass parts seem just as melodic as the vocals do.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say both you and I will sort of adjust. Even if we have some rough arrangements going into it, once you bring stuff to the table, yeah, vocally, definitely.
Yeah. Nothing's final until you hear how it reacts, yeah, with his vocal.
Yeah.
And a lot of times things will clash. Things will, mm-hmm, just be, and you'll have to rearrange a rhythm or a note here or there.
Yeah, I was going to say, we always have that, like, spot, yeah, check. Like, it's like, I'm singing right, this note. What are you playing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of that goes on, yeah, like, in that finalizing
and
process.
And sometimes you like a part a lot, and you're like, oh,
gotta,
you know,
let go.
It's all right, just let it go.
Seriously.
So the bass parts, as I was saying, sound they're not just simply, well, they're very tasteful. It's not like, okay, here comes the bass line rumbling, mm-hmm, rumbling through. They actually seem to be playing a pretty particular role in,
yeah,
the song.
Cool.
How are you approaching the bass parts?
I don't know, sort of, I try to keep in mind, like, the typical, you know, sort of bass approach in the song, like, foundation, and it, but at the same time, like, we're a really dynamic and textural band, too, so I think, I guess as a bass player, I'm fortunate in that it opens up, like, my pedal board is probably just as big as these guys, you know what I mean? It's just,
right,
soundscapes, and...
There's some sounds on the record you might not know are bass.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Seriously.
Awesome.
Yeah. Which is exciting for me, you know, it's not, I mean, like, not that I'm bored with the standard bass player gig, but...
What sections in particular?
Some mirror in the middle section where it kind of breaks down. There's a nylon string acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
And there's some kind of delayed effects, guitar kind of harmonics, and then Jeremy's providing almost all the texture in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Phaser sweeps.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I was actually pretty psyched on, I think it was the second track. I'm not sure the order that you sent me the song, so
yeah,
if they ended up being the album, but mm-hmm, I'm sorry, then all of a sudden the bass just comes in with this, like, massive synth.
Yeah.
It's like,
that's...
That might be Free Design.
Free Design.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
It actually sounded like that's the lead, the main the main melody, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
When I wrote that song, I... actually tried to play all the parts by myself. So I had this guitar part that had the lead, the bass, and the middle, mm-hmm, section in it. And when I brought it in, I'm like, you know, let's just split this up and see what it's like.
Yeah.
And Jeremy just put this rad effects on the lower part of it, you know.
Yeah.
Some kind of distortion and filter.
Yeah, that prunes and custard.
Yeah.
And I think I also put a wah pedal on the record too.
Nice.
Both,
yeah,
of them. Yeah. Just,
yeah,
open the filter right up.
Yeah.
Freaked it out.
And then I gave someone else the other part, and then I wrote a new part over that, but it opened it way up, you know.
Yeah.
But so you're saying that song started with you actually having all of the instruments,
yeah,
playing
had,
at once?
Yeah, it was actually,
once.
I just improvised. I came up with this little riff, and I just hit record and improvised this whole section. And the whole intro of that song is basically what came out.
Right.
Yeah. So starting with those high, you know, plucky guitar parts that kind of interact, and then that bass, and that massive bass line coming in.
Yeah.
Which wasn't so massive when I played it.
it just sounded, sort of kicked.
Yeah.
It was great.
Cool.
Our drummer Jason really hits, you know, hammers that one home too. I mean, that part is great. That drum part.
Yeah.
It's actually, I wish he could be here. The drums on the album also were very nice.
He learned and recorded that stuff very quick. I don't know how long.
Less than 3 months.
Less than three months.
He'd only been in the band 3 months. Mm-hmm. He showed up most of that.
Yeah.
And I think even up until the day we were in the studio and tracking, we knew he had a perfectly good grasp on it, but I think he floored us all with his performance.
He definitely opened up.
These ideas and things he wanted to do in his head, and he just banged stuff out. And
played stuff we didn't hear in practice.
Right.
Yeah.
Very minimal takes, and we were just shocked. And because the order of operations, you know, as you guys know, drums first and just build up rhythm section or whatever. He sort of, I felt like, upped the ante.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hell, you know, now we all have to, like,
step
bring
up
our A game, you know, because he just kicked the shit out of us.
Yeah.
Seriously. He really did.
Well, what he's doing is pretty cool. He's providing the backbeat for the mm-hmm. the song, but he's also at the same time adding to that the soundscape that
yeah,
I'm describing.
The stuff he doubles with Ray and every, on and solos and stuff. Yeah, it's crazy. It's
yeah.
So good.
Yeah. So, from the last album to this one, what's changed? Sort of writing. Has anything changed writing, the writing style?
Anytime you introduce a couple new members, it's certainly going to change everything. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we wrote a lot of this record maybe 4 years ago, so half the record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
our older songs written with the original lineup of four people, and that stuff. We wrote the first record, and the first record to us is very songy. It is very verse chorus to us, even though it might seem that way to other people.
Most normal people.
And then we went through this phase of writing these very drawn out, drony kind of songs with lots of space. Mm-hmm. You
right.
know? And that was a long period. That was like a year or two.
I think over a year.
And we needed to do it. It really strengthened our dynamics and our group kind of chemistry. The song for the All Consumers, which is the end
that
of the record,
really long.
That was written then. Swiss Ticking Time, yes. And Period Piece.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So all of those are written. And, you know, and even I think it even surprised us, because a lot of us wanted to get busier and more intricate, but we were going the opposite way, which is cool. So half of this record, like I said, was written that way. And then Nate joined the band a year ago, right?
Two years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Really?
Nate Johnson plays third guitar. And keys and background vocals.
Yeah.
And we wrote Free Design, which mm-hmm. is now the first track on the record.
Yep.
Which is, we wrote that with Nate. And Heavy, was he around for Heavy?
Yep. We had that pretty well mapped out. But.
Yeah, Heavy is the Cost. We actually had a rough form of that for a while, and then we rewrote it, I think, Nate joined the band. So it is kind of divided, you know, and I think you can hear it a little bit, but we tried to make it flow with the sequencing, so...
Yeah, I messed up the sequencing.
Sorry. I sent you the original, the first sequence that we kind of changed after. So
I listened to it backwards actually for quite some time. But I realized it was going. Yeah. The numbers were counting down.
Yeah,
but it made it better. I was able to make sure I actually got to hear the whole album. Otherwise, I would have been listening to the same like two or three songs over and over again. Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt, but so we had that long drone phase, and then we did get into a busier, more technical phase, which is like the song The Free Design.
Yeah.
And then also, not just more drone and lengthened, that stuff was more through composed as well. So it wasn't verse, chorus. It was like A, B, C, D, E. You know what I mean? We just kept going.
Yeah.
And Free Design is the, you know, the kind of the ultimate, the culmination of that, you know. I mean, that doesn't make a lot of sense if you analyze it in a song structure, like classical form or something, you know.
Yeah.
It is literally A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know, and then it ends. So, and we were exploring that for a long time, you know, but it felt right.
But some of those lines that happen in that song happen in a couple different spots.
Sure.
Yeah. It's weird when you start thinking about it, I'm like, whoa, holy smokes, I'm, you know, this is what I played in the A section. Or
right.
There's like little threads of...
Yeah. And a lot of that stuff is, you know, for me anyway, I would write a guitar melody, and then I would change the bass notes underneath to try to make a different part out of it. You can have a very simple melody in a pentatonic scale, and then throw in notes that are outside of that, and it sounds like a whole different melody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we tried to do that quite a bit on this new stuff.
Yeah. So. It definitely, I actually listened to that song a couple times before I grasped what was happening. And
there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, well, that was one of the first things I thought. Was there.
What the hell?
But I was searching for some recurring themes, thinking that there would be something that was tying it all together. But you're saying that wasn't really done consciously. That was just...
I think it was just one of those things where I started playing a part, then we get into that really busy 11 part that just keeps opening up before that big, like... And... what the hell am I going to play? So I started playing that line underneath, and I was like, damn, it's going to work. So,
yeah.
So just stuff, just trying to, that's what I do at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
try to at least come up with some.
Jeremy really stepped it up on the bass lines on this record. I know we talked about that a little bit before, but he really did.
Well,
you know,
happy to go into it.
We spent a lot of time on the tones. Right, you should talk about that.
We were very happy even in the roughs. With the sound of your bass.
Yeah.
So when you say the tones, you're literally talking about how the bass sounded.
Really spending a lot of time on each distorted bass part. Mm-hmm. Like, is this the right distortion?
Really like picking it all apart, and there's I don't know how many different distortion pedals on any different passages are done totally different, and I kind of wanted it that way. I wanted it to be sort of interesting and different and kind of dangerous, actually. That's one thing that kept coming to my mind, is I want like a really gnarly, like something to stick out, you know. I want this record to be different. I just think I was a bit more not standard issue, but just like a little more reserved tone wise and effect wise and stuff on the first album compared to this one. And a lot of that too was Jason Stewart on drums, like really, like I said, raising the bar. And it's like, holy shit, now I gotta.
It was conscious. We wanted the bass to be featured more. We wanted it to stick out more, because in our first record, it really wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, when you say you're picking at the just different distortions, what kinds of things are you looking at when you're, or listening to when you're doing that?
Just, I think what I listen for is like the vibe of the particular passage, you know. If it's like real busy or like angular or aggressive, you know, I'll hear one sound in my head. It's like a sharper tone, you know what I mean? Like more like gnarl or something, or bite, grit. And if it's like really, you know, like sort of, still loud. There's so many different levels of like the dynamics we play with, but it not as loud, you know, definitely like a rounder sound, just like little warmth or dirt on it.
So you're talking about like different type of distortion for a different type of dynamic. Exactly. So each dynamic's got its own distortion sound.
Yeah. I think on my pedal board right now I have probably five distortions alone.
I have six.
Pluses and overdrives times six. Yeah.
So we have to think that way.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we especially, it's granted. I mean, the four of us trying to sculpt that sort of like level of distortion, it takes a long time, you know?
Yeah, it's not like plug and play or just like, you know, chug away like you would think with just the tonalities and frequencies.
We just,
like,
now that Nate's been in the band, it's been a battle for us to be three guitar players and try to find each other's space, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To make sure we're not stepping on toes or... So, we're getting good at it.
Yeah,
getting
better.
So so this album was recorded at Acadia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. What's the release date looking like for this?
February.
Yeah.
I was gonna say January. February. Okay.
I think it's February.
2011.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Yep. Was there a funny story you wanted to tell us about recording?
Well, the album was a long time in the making. I said, you know,
to say the least,
I said, we wrote a lot of these songs 4 years ago. We actually did our first initial idea, since that material was so drawn out and spacious and droney, like, oh, let's record in a church. This would be awesome. Just a huge reverb, just like kind of let it rip live, you know, kind of the antithesis of our first record, which is very dry and very pieced together.
Right.
And we found an abandoned church, and we holed up in there for a weekend, a couple of days.
Three or four days.
And we recorded the EP, and it sounded great.
Live,
I mean, I really liked it, personally. And we mixed it, but we never really got a final mix done.
We never were really satisfied with the way the stuff was.
And then by the time we were mixing, certain people in the band weren't very happy with the recording and wanted to do it in a real studio and have it be really pristine and hi-fi and everything. And that's not where my head was at the time, unfortunately. But so
we felt like one of those songs would benefit.
Yeah.
Being in like a controlled atmosphere.
Having a drier production.
So.
But we still have that in the can, so I think we're gonna release that someday.
It will be out at some point.
Is it some of the same songs that are on this album?
The same ones I mentioned: The All Consumers, Swiss Taking Time, Period Piece, and Mirror.
So that'll probably. I think we're trying to get that out.
Man, like when did we do that? Probably
late 2011 we'll put that out as like a vinyl-only thing.
We recorded that, though, when? 2007,
I think. So it's been a while.
What's the delay in getting these things out?
We waited 2 years for our first record.
That was sort of our own thing. I think we were really trying to... see what we could do with
it. Yeah, and see if someone would put it out for us and try to find a home for it. And and then I found, you know, I found this guy in Boston that was willing to to distribute, you know, to duplicate it and distribute it for us. So, and that's Eric Rock Records, who does our stuff now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we waited 2 years. You know, we recorded the first record in 2006 and put it out in 2008.
So. Man, most guys are like, record it, put it out now, go.
And believe me, we'd like to be.
But this is close for us. I mean, you know, we did start this record in January.
Of last year.
And we had a few setbacks, and we had to start all over. When did we start again? June?
We started in March, actually, I think.
Was it March? Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, March to...
It was late March, early... No, it was April, I'm sorry. I think it was April. I think mm-hmm. you're right. So we started drums and bass in April, finished up all the guitars by the end of July...
Sounds right.
In maybe mid-August, and then started mixing at the beginning of September and at the end of September, mm-hmm. and then mastered last month.
Yeah.
Right. And so you guys recorded this yourselves?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
First one like that. Mm-hmm. Todd did most of the engineering, actually.
Awesome. Yeah. And it was mastered, where'd you say it was mastered again?
Down at New Alliance East.
Yeah.
Mixed down at New Alliance as well.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Ethan Salt.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a pretty very, good job. Very, very affordable, very good guys, you know, they work pretty hard.
Super nice guys.
Yeah. Good experience. And Nick mastered our first record, Nick Zambiello, mm-hmm. he mastered our first record,
yeah,
so we went back to him.
And worked with him.
For the money, you can't beat it, you know, it's a really, really good deal.
So, one of the, a recurring dialogue we've had throughout this podcast is why print a CD? Well, it's actually sort of a two-part dialogue we've been carrying on. One is why bother printing a CD, and the other is the meaning or the value of an album. And I have to say, listening to this, I'm starting to see the value of an album. You know, a full piece, an artistic statement, in a way. And I think that was one of the first things we talked about in that the very very first
right.
episode
which
of the
is,
relaunch.
Which is real, I mean, to me is precisely what you guys do.
Yeah. I mean, we make albums.
Yeah, we love albums.
We like it. Right.
Yeah. We write that way, we think that way, we listen that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what we grew up on. That's what mm-hmm. you guys grew up on.
Right.
And I love the future.
A few of us still buy vinyl.
I love the future. There's no doubt about it. But I just to me the convenience of having a lot of stuff on one of these things is cool, and it's great, but
doesn't sound as good.
Well, it doesn't sound as good, which obviously makes a big difference,
right?
You know, and it definitely doesn't sound good if you have earbuds in. But you know, a decent set of headphones, it sounds pretty good. But there's nothing that's more gratifying than buying a piece of vinyl or buying a CD, fingernail in, slip it through, cover off, and you just take it off and you put it on and you sit down.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I love about it is it makes you sit down. You sit down and you're like, okay, fuck, we're going to go on this journey. Let's do it. And you put it in and you fucking read it from back to front, you know? And I had this conversation with a lot of people. It's like when I was growing up, and I know Ray can attest for this, the generation before us and our generation as well too, which obviously is pre-internet at this point, the ability to look, and this is especially huge in the jazz world, to be able to look to a record and go, okay, it's Coltrane record. Oh, let's look at all these people that played on this record. It's like, oh, fuck. Yeah, you know, Paul Chambers. It's like, okay, whoa. It's like, wait a minute. I've seen that name somewhere else.
Right.
And you start making these connections.
Yeah.
It's like it's an unsaid family tree of sorts, especially in the jazz world.
Absolutely.
That kind of style stuff where it's like, oh, fuck. And then it's like, oh, he played with blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, shit, I got to check out that stuff.
Right.
And it's just like a never-ending, you know?
Yeah. You wonder if kids are making those connections.
Well, kids, people don't even know what the songs are called.
Yeah, right.
They
talk
about, oh, track six is so cool. Yeah. Oh, my favorite one is track three.
Right,
and
right.
Wow, yeah, the songs don't even have titles anymore.
Right.
It sort of loses a little bit of its artistic vision. But
also, we never really considered ourselves like a band to write just a song, you know what I mean? And like a lot of people just are buying a song, like you say, it's
right,
just a track,
right,
you know what I mean? And we're much more interested in like the whole thing.
What you guys do really, I mean, it doesn't lend itself to chopping it up into a you know, a spoon-sized individual piece that that lives without all the rest of it.
I mean, we could probably do that, but we would have to write specifically for that. You know what I mean? And we're not opposed about doing that.
It's more that there's so many different things that we do. It's like one song will never encapsulate that, you know, as much as we think it might, but it doesn't.
Yeah, that's true.
So will this record be printed on vinyl?
Yeah. It's coming out double vinyl.
Because the CD version and the vinyl version are two different track orders, and the vinyl version has five little bonus pieces that we worked on.
Wow, that's cool. Pieces.
Yeah.
Why put that on the vinyl and not the CD?
To make it special, to make it different, you know, than the CD. It's a different order as well.
More sides of the vinyl.
It's a different listening experience, you know. There's a different track listing and. Segways are cool. They're just kind of a little, you know, some are kind of songy and some are more just textural pieces. So
why change the track order?
A lot of it has to do with the limitations of vinyl time-wise.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A lot of those songs are long, as you know. Free Design is 14 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to get the songs you want next to each other, you know, when you're doing the vinyl. I think we were aiming for 21 minutes a side.
21's like max.
So even less or 17 minutes. So that affected a lot of it.
Yeah.
And with the segue pieces, the segues work in certain ways that they connect songs in a very cool way that we kind of help that out, because then we can, all right, we can't put Free Design first, we'll put this song first, and the segue will go into this song. So it really is a different listen, you know. It's like a kind of second statement with the same material. You know? It was nice.
Great. Well, is there anything else that is important to you guys that the people know about the new album or? Or what?
Oh, what's the title?
Period Piece. The album is called Period Piece.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Explanation?
Well, I don't know. I think it stemmed. We had a conversation once that. I guess it's like a sort of a two-fisted comment on my end. I think we had somebody who once coined us as being like an early 90s sound as to what we do. And I guess that there's some truth to that statement, you know. I mean, that obviously to me in my growing up, that sort of music made a big impact on me, and a lot of bands that we still listen to from then still listen, you know, or from that time period. But so it was sort of like an homage to that comment a little bit, with a couple lines in there, you know, I just think that. Or I guess it's a three-sided beast, I guess. Because, like, if you think about it, a record really is. It's just a moment in time. And there's a lot of people that really get really anal about having everything really be precise. You know what I mean? And these guys talked me out of it a little bit, because there's a lot of, like, chair squeaks and stuff from a lap steel track that I did on one of the... I was like, oh, that has to get out of there. That has to get out of there. That's really annoying. And they were just like, dude... You know, like, listen to old Zeppelin records, you know, and it's just like happy mistakes, you know, and it's sort of kind of like this, like, that's what it was. That's what it is. That's what it was. And that's, you know, we may never come back there again. You know, I feel like that even with the first record as well, too. Like, we're not technically that band anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's true. It's true.
So when we try to approach that music again, it's almost, it's there. It doesn't have the same feel, but we have to still make it fit. Feel-wise with what we do now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's sort of a.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it.
Thank you guys very much.
Todd, Ray, Jeremy, Baltic Sea.
February?
Yes,
February.
Great piece. Vinyl CD.
Yep.
All right. Great. Thanks, guys.
Awesome.
Thanks,
see you guys soon.
Bye.